Sometimes longer isn't better. So if you're looking for a fantasy NFL game that doesn't last all season, try Paddy Power Fantasy. Every game week is a season in itself. Try it for free on our super short, super free contest on this Sunday's 6pm games. The top 900 customers in the contest win a prize with £400 for first place. Search Paddy Power Fantasy to pick your team. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18+.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Good to have you with us this fine Monday as we look back on week six in the NFL and a lot of big stories to be getting into. The Saints win again, the 49ers turn over the LA Rams, Minnesota show their teeth. So we'll be getting into which team we think is the best in show at the moment in the NFC. We'll get through all the key results from the weekend. We'll look back at another successful international series game in London too, and a great win for the Carolina Panthers, who are forcing their way surely into the reckoning. Comedian Marek Larwood drops by very shortly to get into all of that. And then later on, we're going to be joined by the statistician Charlie Mullen, who's been keeping a lot of data about the international series since that very first game back in 2007. So he's got some interesting stats about yesterday's game at Spurs and some good general international series goodies for you as well. Don't forget, this is the first of four episodes dropping this week. If you're new to the show, you've seen us, for example, on the iTunes homepage, and thanks very much to the Apple Podcast crew for that support. Good to have you with us, and we drop four episodes a week. Mike Carlson dropping by on Wednesday for a deep dive. We're going to do a mailbag special with Iron Mike this week, so hit us up on social media to get your questions in to Ask Mike at the NC Show. Jay Bell in the house on Friday, dropping by at the ESPN studios. So we've got a jam-packed week coming your way. And if you haven't already, subscribe to us on your podcatcher of choice. Right then, enough of all this housekeeping and all this talk. Let's get straight down to business. And welcome for the first time this season, the great Marek Larwood. Marek, man, good to have you on.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Nat, and I can't wait to start talking about American football-related items.
Well, okay, let's get the first things first before we get into a lot happening in week six, and we're going to rattle through it, all the key things that you need to know at home. Let's familiarise you with our listeners. Now, a lot of our old-school listeners will know you from pods gone by, but for the benefit of our new listeners, you are a comedian, you're an actor. You're a Detroit Lions fan, right? Those are probably the three key things we need to get out there, yeah?
I'm bald.
I'm bald as well. Four key things that we need to get out of. And how is life? How is work going? What are you working on at the moment?
I'm going to another series of Celebability, which is a show that comes on after Love Island, which I'm assuming that none of your listeners watch.
I don't know. I think there are probably some secret. I know Ollie, our producer, is a huge Love Island fan, so I'm sure he'll have stayed on and watched you after Love Island. That's a decent time slot, though.
Well, it's work. It's work, isn't it? I am 43 now, so I do not know right. Who many of the people are.
And how about your Lions? Of course, so we're recording this on Monday, so involved later on tonight in Monday Night Football against the Packers. Tough old gig there, but pretty decent season so far. Are you buying into the Matt Patricia era?
Well, I think we've made some great acquisitions. Justin Coleman's been brilliant, and against the Chiefs, what's odd about the Lions is we've won two games we should have lost. We should have lost to the Eagles. We should have lost to the Chargers, who were so unlucky and just made mistakes, as they did again this week. And then we just played one bad quarter against the Cardinals, who I don't rate at all. Mm. And then against the Chiefs, we played absolutely brilliantly. But I think they're just a more talented team. So the fact that we're 2-1-1 is just a miracle, really. But I think the NFC North is the... Well, I don't know. NFC South as well.
Toughest division in football?
I think those two are.
Is that what you think? We're going to look at the NFC in a lot more detail, put some power rankings together as well, because they're interesting results. Of course, the 49ers, comprehensive win. They are looking like the real deal. And strangely, for a team with that record, they've been going a little bit under the radar. So we're going to pay some lip service to them. We're going to try and work out some kind of power rankings in the NFC a little bit later on. But we're going to start with Sunday night football, Marek. We'll get straight into that. And another deeply frustrating night for Philip Rivers and the Chargers, going down 24-17 to the Steelers. And it is the story that we've seen many times before, really, with this LA Chargers side. Sloppy Rivers turning over the ball again. Melvin Gordon back in business, but barely delivering. They had, I think, 10 touches, 45 total yards. The offensive line, same old leaky problems there as well. It seems like the Chargers season, which started so promisingly, I think a lot of people thought they'd repeat what they did last year or thereabouts. It looks like it is going to the dogs, doesn't it?
I think there should be a luck index in American football, because typically the Lions might have been really unlucky, the Browns perennially unlucky, and the Chargers are almost taking up that mantle. I look at some of the turnovers. You know, it's just when if Philip Rivers gets a tip pass, if it falls into the Steelers' hands, you know, maybe one out of five times that's going to happen. Yeah. And it always happens to the Chargers. Against us, they were unlucky. I mean, you would have said they would have easily turned over the Steelers with a third string quarterback. But I just think there's, and Melvin Gordon, it must have been disruptive as well, him holding out for so long. So he's not going to be familiar. He's not going to be totally.
Is that one of the worst? Is that going to go down as one of the worst holdouts ever? I mean, particularly last night, when you look at it, was James Conner doing the damage for the Steelers, who, of course, was the main beneficiary of Le'Veon Bell holding out last season. Bell obviously held out for the entire season with the Steelers before he was dealt to the Jets, and James Conner stepped up. And after a couple of weeks, it was, well, we don't need Le'Veon Bell anymore. This guy is decent enough. And there's the same kind of issue, I guess, with Melvin Gordon. He held out trying to get Zeke Elliott type money. He didn't. And now he's reasonably ineffective in a side that at the moment isn't looking like it's going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, well, I think that something strange is happening, is that the sort of cult of personality is, people are getting a bit sick of that in the NFL. Mm. I think the Patriots have always been that side where they take on difficult players and they turn them around. But the whole Antonio Brown saga this year, and the fact that the Giants were willing to part with Odell Beckham. These are superstars with difficult personalities. And it's fascinating that you've got the Steelers, who've been decimated by losing, you know, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and also the injuries to Ben Roethlisberger. But they're star players. They've lost, you could say, primarily because of personality conflicts.
Yeah.
And yet they're turning over a team who's sticking with Melvin Gordon, who, it must have been disruptive. So I think it's good, actually. I think it's good for the NFL that the players are losing their sort of power somewhat, and that teams are willing to sort of get rid of these players that do cause more problems than they are an asset to the team.
It's a really interesting point. On the Steelers, you mentioned Roethlisberger going down. Of course, his backup, Mason Rudolph, out last night as well after that horrendous hit. So he was in concussion protocol. Should be back quite soon, but it meant that Devlin Hodges, the rookie, making his first NFL start. And, you know, it was serviceable, I guess. He completed 15 of 20, so he was quite tidy with the ball. Didn't do a huge amount, but didn't need to, because, I say, James Conner. And then the wonderfully named Benny Snell came in for Conner after Conner suffered an injury in the third quarter. Benny Snell, sounds like, I didn't do that on purpose. I promise you, I didn't. I was going to say
Benny. It sounds like a four-year-old has made up a team. We've got a running back. I'm going to have Benny Snell. Quarterback, I'm going to have Brian Skids.
Oh, man. I was going to say he sounds like a Scorsese character, but yours is much, much better.
No, definitely a four-year-old.
Benny Snell, great. We've got to put a list together of the best named players in the NFL right now, because there are some belters, but Benny's got to be in there, speaking of power rankings. So the Steelers moved to 2-4. Is there any hope for them? Or, I mean, given they're in the AFC North, of course, which means they're now level with the Cleveland Browns, would you believe? They've got identical records.
Well, that is the worst division, isn't it? I think the AFC
North. East, also,
they're playing the NFC South, aren't they? So they're matched. They've all got to play the 40. Is that the right? The 49ers? Or who are they playing? They're playing a good division, aren't they? Yeah, it is. They've got to play the Seahawks, haven't they? 49ers and Rams.
Yes.
So I think you can probably win that division. You want to see an 8-8 team win that division.
It's one of those divisions. I remember where the Panthers won the NFC South with a 7-9 record.
Yeah, Seahawks done it with 7-9 as well, I think. They won the division with 7-9. It's odd for the Steelers, because they're in rebuilding mode. but they're in a division where
they can win. Yeah.
Yeah, but unless you don't want to win, because I think there's a lot of strong teams. When you look at the Chiefs, you look at the Texans, who are really impressive, and the Patriots. And you've got to say the AFC between those three, I think, are far and away better than a lot of teams or anyone else in the AFC. So what is the point of going to the playoffs and just being an 8-8 team for a while? Get a good draft pick in, but how are they going? It seems to be quite polarized, the NFL this year, where there's a lot of really, really bad teams in rebuilding mode.
Very few exceptional ones. It's a good point. Well, let's talk about two of them that you've earmarked as serious contenders, because they went head to head, of course, yesterday, and it lived up to the hype as well. The Texans taking down the Chiefs 31-24. Of course, a lot of people understandably were talking about the quarterback head-to-head battle here. Mahomes had injured the week before. Did he look completely himself to you in this one, Marek, or did you sense that he was slightly banged up?
I think he's a bit banged up, and there's so much pressure on him. And people have, I think, since the Lions and the Colts played him, they've worked out if they go play man-to-man on D, that he maybe struggles a bit more. But he's just carrying the team. There's no doubt he's brilliant. I think he did look a bit injured. But for me, I thought Deshaun Watson, I think this season, showed that he is an elite quarterback. I think he's brilliant. I think he's a threat running with the ball. He's motivates his whole team. He's a born leader. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the MVP race.
The MVP
as well.
Discussion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not a coincidence that this was the second straight week the Texans protected him. Second straight week, they didn't allow any sacks. And that's been a perennial problem, of course, for them. And then particularly during his tenure as their starter. And this is what happens. It's not exactly rocket science. Protect your quarterback to that degree and good things happen. Of course, other key protagonists in the mix, DeAndre Hopkins, who had such an exceptional season last year and is, no doubt about it, a top five receiver in the NFL. This was his first touchdown since week one. And of course, it was the catch that clinched it, and a really gutsy call as well from Bill O'Brien. Where does this leave the power rankings in the AFC then? The Patriots are best in show at the moment. Do you think the Texans, based on this result, without overreacting to it, are very close to Kansas City?
Yeah, I do. I think they've got Hopkins, they've got Will Fuller, who's a brilliant receiver. They've really picked up two really decent running backs, Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson. Mm. And that's a really good tandem there that I think has gone a bit unspoken. That relieves some of the pressure on Deshaun Watson. And their D's always been good. So I really think they're looking like a strong bet. I mean, they're in arguably a tough division as well, but I think they just look solid. Whereas the Chiefs, Mahomes has to, he's just so remarkable, but you feel like he does carry the team. I mean, Tyreek Hill's back. I don't like him as a human being, but that should improve things as a player. He's very dynamic and he sort of adds.
And he demonstrated that, didn't he? I mean, straight off, off the bat, no Sammy Watkins again, of course, it's worth pointing out, and a banged up line as well. So you've got to put, a word of caution before, I think, overreacting to the Chiefs suddenly in the decline. But it's a really interesting point you make about Mahomes and the pressure. Do you get a sense that if you bring this back to football for a minute, and players like Messi and Ronaldo in particular, those types of players who are exceptional, of course, and can change a game with one bit of skill. So there is often a sense that they've got to do that every time they touch the ball. And do you think Mahomes is slightly kind of in that bracket because he's such an exhibitionist in terms of the way that he plays football and the way that he's moved that position on, the highlight reel aspect of his play? Do you think there is a sense now that when he has, by most people's standards, an okay game, or very good game rather, it would just be deemed an okay game by him, and he's almost expected to do something really, really remarkable every time he's got the ball?
Well, I think a weird thing happens when you play Mahomes. I think when the Lions play him, when the other teams I've seen playing him, because he is, I think, far and away the best quarterback at the moment. And he's, you know, the greatest quarterback of a generation where he's playing. The teams up their game. I mean, the Lions, notably the secondary, played a lot better against Mahomes. And I see teams who play poorly one week think, oh, we're up against Mahomes. You can feel that sort of concentration and buzz every time he's there. Not just him and the offense, but amongst the whole D as well. It's really interesting. I think what often happens, I think it's like in baseball when you get a brand new player. They come in, or even a brand new quarterback. They're an unknown quantity. So like Kyle Allen, for example, and Gardner Minshew, they're totally unknown. So the teams don't know how they're going to play. So they often have a couple of good weeks before all the millions of spotty weirdos analyze all their play and work out, all right, he can't work. He can't operate outside the pocket. If you pressure his right side, he's terrible throwing. He only throws like 15% to the left. So we'll just focus all our secondary on that area. I'm not saying it in a very articulate manner, but they get worked out. Only the really great players who vary their game can manage to sort of overcome all, because you've got thousands of people analysing it constantly.
Yeah. And it's the unknown quantity, as you say. So the fundamental difference between a backup quarterback being thrust into a game where the opposition's defense hasn't had time to prepare for them, versus that team playing them 2 weeks later, for example, or the team that's playing them a week later has had time. And to your point, 3-4 games in, quarterbacks with limitations undoubtedly are going to get found out. And that is why often they are backups or at the bottom end of the 32 teams in terms of their starter rankings. Let's move on to Kyle Allen then. And the game in London, did you get to either of the games at Spurs?
No, I prefer, which is controversial, I prefer watching it on my computer in my room.
Would you prefer the broadcast? It's not a controversial, is it? Well, it's an interesting point, but you prefer watching games on TV to live.
Yeah.
I think that is a big concern for the NFL. And I think this is probably true of a lot of live sport moving forward, is broadcast becomes stronger and stronger, both in terms of definition and quality of picture and output. I think, but also with the home comforts and, you know, the multi-channel, the red zone vibe of being able to watch lots of different games at the same time and social media and everything else. I think it is a huge concern for the NFL. And I bet you're not alone in that. What is your Sunday evening preferred mode? So are you a red zone through and through? Do you have a live game on as well? Do you have kind of multi-screens on with different games and red zone?
My favorite thing is to do multi-screen, one game and the red zone. I think we talked about this before, because the red zone, you just see highlights and you don't really get a feel for the game.
Watching
a match a day in soccer. I'm saying soccer because you've got American listeners.
Exactly.
You have players you just watch. You watch 5 minutes of the game. My team in football, you have a player who does amazing things, the highlight videos, but does loads of awful things as well. So you only ever see the amazing things.
Sure.
So I always watch
the 2 minute or so highlights on NFL.com. Sometimes don't even have all the touchdowns. I mean, have you noticed that? It just sometimes just miss out a score.
It's quite hard to keep across it all because you're really reliant on red zone and what they show. And so I always try and watch a game. Teams I like watching, like the Chiefs are always good to watch. The Browns are good to watch. Obviously, I watch the Lions. I do like watching the Chargers as well. They tend to have exciting games. There's certain teams who I like who are quite exciting. I'll just tune in if the game's getting exciting. Want to watch more of that.
You obviously have the TalkSport 2 live show on as well, right?
I have TalkSport 2 playing in my head 24 hours a day.
How's that? Have you managed that? Have you just got some kind of chip implanted that just plays it?
Yeah, the odd thing is that I can no longer hear it. I'm listening to it.
It's like white noise.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. Okay. Well, I hope that sorts itself out by next Sunday.
It takes 7 years of listening to TalkSport 2 to achieve this goal.
Let's talk about the Panthers win at the game you weren't at, but presumably watching on your laptop. It was a really impressive defensive performance from the Panthers, getting to Jameis Winston 7 times. And of course, Winston coughing up the ball as well on numerous occasions. So a really impressive display defensively by the Panthers, which we expected to see because that Bucks offensive line was banged up, and Winston is very much boom or bust, isn't he? A high risk kind of player, and we saw the bust Winston variety on show. How seriously should we be taking this Carolina Panthers side, do you think?
Well, I think it's, I don't know what's going to happen when Cam Newton comes back. That's a big question for me, because Kyle Allen seems to be running it really, really well. Christian McCaffrey's having an incredible season, so if, as long as he doesn't get injured, it'll be fine. And I don't know whether, for me, whether Cam Newton's, do they move on from Cam Newton? What do they do? It's really odd.
It's a big concern. I mean, Rivera was deadpanning it when he was asked, understandably. But I think it's a massive concern, because even when Newton comes back and he's good to go, I'm not sure he's going to be right, because I don't think he's been physically right by the look of it for quite a long time. And then you talk to beat writers. We had one on the radio show a few weeks back, and the suggestion is that he's, you know, he's not going to be anything close to 100% fit this season, even when he comes back, right? And Allen gives this Panthers side that type of balance that a lot of serious contenders and often championship teams need, which is, as you say, they've got a worldly playmaker in McCaffrey that can pretty much win games on his own with one play, a really, really strong defense, and a quarterback that is, by and large, very, very careful with the ball. He doesn't give it up. So even if he's, the ceiling isn't massively high with him, he isn't a game-changing talent in the way that Newton definitely can be, and players like McCaffrey are, he's not going to lose the game for you either. I'm quite big on this at the moment. I think this is true with Garoppolo and the 49ers too. And I know he had a pick yesterday, but generally speaking, he is careful with the ball against players like, say, Baker Mayfield, that Brett Favre style will try and thread the eye of the needle and throw it into triple coverage. And that will pull off at times and be, you know, incredible to watch. But a Jameis Winston is going to cost you too many games as a result of that. So I wonder whether they make a decision based on that. They think, look, particularly if they keep on winning, we have got a team here that has got really good balance. So let's go with the hot hand.
Safe and boring hand. He's thrown thrown no interceptions, right, so far in his career. Is that, I'm not sure if that's right. I think it's something along those lines. But Cam Newton was never, you know, he was always that dual threat quarterback, and he never was an amazing passer. You know, he never was, I don't think, an elite passer of the ball. Yeah. And since, you're right, since he's had these injuries, he's not been the same as he was in that Super Bowl season. They had definitely hasn't been the same. And I love all these quarterback dilemma things and see what they're going to do, if they're going to move on. I mean, he is the face of the franchise, so.
Yeah. But it's an interesting, I mean, you know, if you think about, they were 0-2 at the start of the season, the first, you know, 2 weeks into the season. And there was talk of Newton coming to the end of his time, not least contractually as well. Rivera, the front office, a few weeks back, it could have been a whole scale change at Carolina. Now we're definitely going to get into them in our power rankings in a little bit. So big win for them. Let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys next, because another worrying defeat for them against the New York Jets. The Jets had Sam Darnold back. Of course, he'd been out for a number of weeks with glandular fever. And I think a lot of people felt that it was, I half chuckle because not because a man had glandular fever, but because the Jets are like the Chargers and your Lions and the Browns, one of those teams that seems to be cursed with bad luck. And when Darnold went down with that, Jets fans I know were just rolling their eyes, like, come on. But came good yesterday, didn't he? And I know that Amari Cooper went out for the Cowboys, which affected their offense significantly, because such a strong tandem with Dak Prescott, and the Cowboys were in it for a lot of the game. And of course, that failed 2-point conversion meant that they lost, but they could have taken it to the death. But another worrying defeat for them. And Jerry Jones, their owner afterwards, Marek, saying, I don't think we're that strong a team. Are they suddenly falling out of the wrecking now? I mean, it's been a bizarre old season for the Cowboys.
Well, it's odd. I think it was the worst time to meet the Jets. They lost their two tackles were injured, aren't they?
Yes, exactly.
And the Jets' defense, for me, they were the star of this game. They looked great. And that the, is it Quinnen Williams? Quinnen Williams played well. They were just all over and really pressuring Dak Prescott. And they played with this intensity I've not seen the Jets play in a while. It seemed like a completely different Jets team. I don't know if you think it was just the Sam Darnold coming back. I think something clicked in their defense, and I think they knew that the Cowboys O-line was, you know, with it, had injury problems, and they really sort of dominated that. So, yeah, I think it was really impressive from the Jets. I don't think the Cowboys are that great. I think they're lucky enough to be in division with the Redskins and Giants, who are struggling. and the Eagles, who've got injury problems as well. So I think they could still end up winning that division and making the playoffs, but I don't think they are among the top contenders in the NFC.
I mean, you're right. It's one of those divisions that is very winnable, and they're playing the AFC East as well. Those two matched up. So that is definitely in their favor. In terms of the injuries to the line, Lael Collins, I think, is maybe the more serious one. Ian Rappaport, the NFL Network insider, was talking about it being, I don't think it's a torn MCL, but an MCL injury. And Tyron Smith, of course, as well, out. So that is a massive concern going forwards, given the form that they're in. But they, if you look at what we say in terms of that division that is eminently winnable, all is not lost for the Cowboys at the moment. What do you think they should do with Dak Prescott? And does that a lot depend on the next 4 or 5 weeks? I mean, let's just say they do go on more of a skid, and back to your point earlier.
They should get Benny Smells in.
Do you think they fall out of playoff reckoning realistically, right? Does that mean that they don't pay Dak Prescott?
Well, the whole quarterback thing is quite odd, isn't it? Because Dak Prescott sits in the middle, this weird sort of middle ground where he's not elite. He has great games where everyone goes, oh, yeah, a great quarterback, then he'll play pretty average. I think you definitely got to take into account that he's lost to his offensive line, key members of the offensive line. But then again, you also should take into account that the Cowboys have had the best O-line, you could say, in the last 3 years.
Yes.
So could any quarterback go in there and play at a high level with that amount of protection? But it's how you get, it's just such a pain in the backside trying to get a decent quarterback, you know, with the Lions, people complaining about Matt Stafford, but I still think he's brilliant. It's so hard. You see so many people draft early. You see Josh Rosen's now in the abyss. He's been dropped. Marcus Mariota, I think that's the end of his career. He's the number two pick. Mitchell Trubisky, I think he's the bane of all Bears fans and will stop the Bears, you know, winning any titles, because he looks like he's about to start crying every time he throws a ball.
We were talking about that in the booth yesterday before the game, that and the Jags, I think it was initially Bill Simmons on his show that was suggesting that one of the Jags quarterbacks they could deal, right? So when Foles comes back, do you deal Foles? Do you deal Minshew? And I think he was saying, would the Bears do a deal where they swap Minshew for Trubisky, for example? But it does raise an interesting question, actually, with the Jags, whether they will shift one of those players, and also what the Bears do as well. I mean, the same question with Kyle Allen, I guess, if the Panthers do go back with Cam, the Bears only look at a player like that because they're built the same way, a great defense. They just need a player that isn't going to lose them games.
Yeah. I mean, does Cam Newton get shifted somewhere?
Right.
But he will command more money. I think the Jags question is, I mean, Foles seems to be, I think he's destined to be that player who comes in and saves franchises. Yeah. I think the Jags would deal Foles because he's older. There's a weird sort of, if
more money, more cap space as well.
Exactly. Minshew's got this quite sort of cult status that seems to have energized the fans.
Yes.
Which Jacksonville fan, you know, the Jaguars never really had that sort of excited fan base. He's exciting, he's passionate, and he's young and he's cheaper. So you just deal Foles, who had the injury issue. Someone's going to pick him up. And then the Jags could be, well, they are sort of almost contenders again now. So I think maybe we could see Foles move around. And I think I really rate Nick Foles. I think he's a great player. He's got a great arm on him. And the way he played for, I think he had a couple of great seasons for Philadelphia.
Yeah, he has.
But that Super Bowl run, I mean, once someone's done that, you know, literally carried your team, helped your team win a Super Bowl, you know, you can't say there's any doubts about them being a playoff quarterback, which there are a lot of questions about a few quarterbacks and how they deal with pressure.
Well, let's talk about one in particular, Jared Goff getting shut down by the 49ers, 20-7, San Francisco wins. And Goff contained to 78 yards. That's all he managed, completing just over half of his passes. The 49ers defense sacking him 4 times offensively. They were impressive again. It was really a solid all-round performance from San Francisco, and another worrying performance from Jared Goff. And what do the Rams go, or where do they go from here? Because it starts 1 week, 2 weeks, overreaction central. He hasn't suddenly become a bad quarterback overnight, but suddenly they're in this situation now, not dissimilar to where the Cowboys are, and the pressure is mounting that maybe Goff isn't their guy. Todd Gurley didn't suit up, and he's got huge injury concerns, as we suspected going into this season. The shine coming off the McVay Rams at the moment, and he's facing probably the first crisis of his head coaching career, isn't he?
But no one ever rated Goff. I don't think Goff was.
Yeah, I think last season the numbers don't lie. And I think you've got to look at the context of it, that as we well know, he was mollycoddled to a stronger or lesser degree by McVay. But yeah, in that situation, certainly he was delivering. I know he didn't turn up at the Super Bowl.
Mollycoddled is a great word to use in a sports podcast. Mollycoddled.
I thought you'd like that.
All 1920s.
Mollycoddled. I think that Sean McVay mollycoddles Jared Goff.
I think we have to bear in mind that the 49ers looks pretty convincing. I think they are going to be one of the best defense at the moment. Yeah. They just really, he was constantly under pressure. So I think you have to take that into account when judging Goff. The 49ers have come from, well, slowly crept up, haven't they, to being this undefeated team, and no one really is taking that seriously. Maybe after this game, I just watched the highlights of it. I thought, I never really thought they were legit. And now I think they,
now you do.
Yeah.
I mean, defensively, yeah, they were 0-9, the Rams, on third down, 0-4 on fourth down. It was, yeah, a comprehensive performance in another team that has, as you say, a really strong defense. Offensive playmakers, George Kittle, take a bow. Great running game. I mean, the running game didn't really kick off. Tevin Coleman got a score, but it didn't really kick off against the Rams. They kind of held him and Breeder in check, but it has been strong this season. There is enough balance there, I think, that have to be taken seriously. Well, let's get into that then in terms of the power rankings, Marek, in the NFC. So the Saints won, of course, again, another win for Teddy Bridgewater, beating the Jaguars. We figured that would be a low-scoring slugfest kind of affair, and it was 13-6, but Teddy getting the win there. And the Seahawks, what a game that was against the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland going into an absolute tear early on, but Russell Wilson getting it done once again, an absolute thriller. The Browns on the wrong end of it. Seattle win again, 32-28, the final there. And of course, the Vikings, they blew away Philadelphia pretty comprehensively. That was as well, 38-20 at the final. So all of those three teams have to be in the mix as well. So let's take a look at this, this NFC power rank. And we've got the Saints, the 49ers, the Rams still have to, I think, be in the conversation, as do the Cowboys. The Panthers emerging, the Seahawks, of course, as well. The Vikes. What are you looking at in terms of your... Let's take your top six in the NFC.
Well, we'll talk a bit about the Vikings. I think you have to take them seriously. I think Kirk Cousins came under a bit of criticism for being too conservative in the
last...
Do you rate
Kirk Cousins?
I'd still... I prefer him to Jared Goff. I prefer him to Dak Prescott. I think he's in that sort of weird, almost like Jimmy Garoppolo sort of model, where you don't really notice him that much. He doesn't really do anything spectacular. But then again, in this game, in this part...
Beats up bad teams, struggles against tough teams. But then, you know, he put that argument on its head against the Eagles.
But I think he was brilliant against the Eagles.
Yeah.
And there were some problems in the locker room with Stephon Diggs saying he wasn't getting enough touches. Then he scores he was brilliant in the 3-touchdown game.
Yeah.
You've got Adam Thielen, who I really rate. I love him. I think he's a really great receiver. Dalvin Cook.
Yeah.
He's come back from injury. He's looks a great running back.
Alexander Mattison as well, the rookie who spells with Dalvin Cook, had a good game too. So they got depth in the running back position.
Yeah, I think the Vikings are going to win the NFC North. I just think they look great, and I think their offense is really dangerous. In terms of other sides, I mean, there's no
the
one.
Saints have to be on top, right? Yeah. They're winning without Drew Brees.
Yeah, I think they just the Saints. For me, it's between the Saints and the Seahawks.
Yeah,
I think they've both been contenders for quite a few years. I mean, the Saints were done over in that conference final game. So I think they've got a...
They were done over.
The Saints got done over.
Guy Ritchie on me. It's got done over. Guy Ritchie doing an NFL film would be great. They would maybe some... I quite like the idea of East End gangsters ending up owning an NFL franchise. Yeah. They've done him over.
So I think for me, at the top of the Saints and the Seahawks, you know, they've both got really wily head coaches. They're really experienced. I mean, like, the Seahawks, Russell Wilson's just playing spectacular football at the moment. And they've got, you know, players who've been there before. They've got that running back. Who's that? You know, name the Seahawks running back. I can't remember who's playing.
Chris Carson.
Yeah, Chris Carson. They both look good. I do think that their division's so strong. I think the 49ers are contenders as well. And the Rams. I mean, you could have three teams come out of that division into the playoffs.
So you feel the Rams are going to be okay. What about the Packers? I mean, as we said at the top of the show, we're recording this before Monday Night Football. They've got to be. I mean, their defense is really stepping up as well. And as we've talked a little bit about on the pod already this season, the offense hasn't really got into full gear yet. Certainly Aaron Rodgers hasn't got into fifth gear. And yes, Aaron Jones has, and then some. But again, speaking of balance there, I mean, you've got a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who you think is only going to get stronger this season the more that offense starts to become cohesive. They've got to be in the mix.
Yeah, I think they are. I think, I mean, in that division, all four teams could potentially get in the playoffs, but I think they're all going to lose to each other. I think they're all going to take games off each other. And, you know, they've all got to play, you know, the Chiefs as well. So they're going to lose a game. They're all lose a game there. I just think for me that the Rams are stronger. 49ers look good and the Seahawks look good. And if they all get wins against the AFC opponents, they could all get in the playoffs. But you know, Vikings, wouldn't surprise me if any of the four teams won the NFC North out of the Bears, Lions, Packers and Vikings, because I think it's the tightest division. I know the Lions won't do it because they haven't won it in 25 years, but
they'll blow it again.
Yeah.
Just to kind of draw a line under this, do we think the Rams are going to be okay and make the playoffs then?
Well, I think they're going to make it as a wild card, yes.
Okay, and what about the Cowboys? Do they get it back on track?
I think the Eagles might take that division if they get everyone back in time from injury.
And based on what you're saying, you're going to need 11-5 for a wild card probably in the NFC?
Yeah, I mean, literally, that's one thing that's fascinating, that all the NFC teams are beating all the AFC teams.
Yeah.
So for the AFC, you're going to see one team in the playoff, I reckon, about 8-8, I think. And then it's going to be so difficult in the NFC to get through. Really, really difficult.
Do the Panthers move on from Cam or stick with Kyle Allen?
I think he's undecided. Mm. Only they know how serious the injury is to Cam Newton. They only tell you at the end of the season, don't they? So when someone's been playing badly, he had a broken arm for the last six games, but we didn't want to say anything, so he didn't get targeted. I think there's something seriously wrong with Cam Newton. He had to remodel his whole throwing action, didn't he, during the off season, which is never a good sign.
Yeah.
Having to do that.
All right, let's move on to a couple of other teams and narratives I want to get into with you quickly before we wrap.
Love narratives.
Do you? I've heard you do. Miami, Washington, of course, slugging it out at the wrong end of proceedings. And I guess a game that was perplexing for a lot of fans of those respective franchises, because you want to win games, but at the same time, you know that a couple of eking out a few wins here and there, the Bengals in this conversation as well, you're going to blow your chance of the number one draft pick, which is always a valuable commodity, but particularly going in to next year's draft, particularly if you need a quarterback, which all of those teams, well, we don't know what they've got with Dwayne Haskins, the Redskins, but you certainly feel that the Dolphins and the Bengals are going to need a quarterback. And with two of the Alabama quarterback, the consensus number one pick, you don't want to win games, but you want to win games, Marek. And in the end, the Redskins got it done. So is it one of those situations where, yeah, Miami lost, but actually it's not really that bad a thing that they lost?
But the end was great, though. Ryan Fitzpatrick coming on again with a bit of Fitz magic, him suddenly reigniting the Dolphins' offense. I really enjoyed the end of this game. It was
were they wrong to go for it? Because they went for the 2-point conversion to win it when they could have tied it.
What was odd was, I think, no, they weren't wrong to go with it, because I think that the Redskins are the better team. So when you've got a chance to win it, you have to try and win it. But their play selection was rubbish. The 2-point conversion attempt was hand off and then try to the running back and then try and run through the
Teddy and Drake.
I just thought this is, and he almost dropped it on purpose. That's when you think, oh right, they were just trying to lose that one. But I quite like the matchups between the losing teams. I do think there's a thing in American culture which they really hate losing a lot more than British people do. I don't know if there's a thing. Well, I think there's a whole more of a stigma for not winning. I think they'd rather win, you know, two or three games than be the worst
term gain, irrespective of it damaging, the long-term potential of continuing to lose. Yeah, I hear you. And I think it's a difficult balance for the owners as well. I get that. I mean, this idea, I don't think any players certainly and coaches deliberately go out to lose games. I just don't think, I just don't think that happens. Does morale go because you see all the best players around you dealt and you realize you're hiding to nothing possibly? And does that constitute the same kind of thing in terms of how the front office are dealing with it? But, you know, they'll argue it's a duty of care that we need to stockpile these picks. It's how the NFL works. Give us a few years and we're going to be good again in theory anyway. But as we see with the Browns, for example, this year, it doesn't always work out in practice.
Well, I think the NBA did a brilliant thing when they came to draft picks, which they should implement in the NFL, where a lot of the listeners will probably really know that you get a percentage. It's a lottery.
The draft lottery. Yeah.
Yeah. All the teams that make the playoffs are ranked in the playoffs section. And all the teams that don't make the playoffs, they get a percentage according to record. So of getting that first pick, and they do a lot. So for example, say the Dolphins were the worst team, rather than automatically having the first pick, they would get a percentage of maybe their name would be in the lottery 50 times out of 100 or 20.
Proportionately higher, yeah. But it's not a guarantee they get the pick.
And I think that would make it much more competitive, because people are starting to tank. Like in the NBA, the team I supported, the 76ers, they tanked for about 3 or 4 years to get this number one draft picks, and some of them don't work out. And then now they're a playoff force. I think it's really damaging to the league, because you've got teams where the team's playing that AFC North, or say you're playing a division with all these awful teams. Mm. Well, it's not fair, because the Patriots, based in the Patriots.
The cakewalk every year, yeah.
Yeah, they've got the Dolphins. They're all going to get a win against the Dolphins. They're going to get two wins against the Dolphins. And it's not fair for your teams in that division. So I really think they should bring in the lottery thing to stop tanking. And then so you could just miss out the playoffs. Then you could get the first round pick. And then that could be, because nothing worse, and teams like my friend supports the Bills as well, I support the Lions, of being, the last few years, being like 7-9, 8-8. And so you know you want to get a draft pick around 13, 14, 12 or 13. Probably not going to get a blue chip franchise changing player unless you're lucky around that number. Because there's maybe about 7 or 8 or 5 or 6 each season. So you're just going to be perennially average. Yeah. So I really think bringing that lottery.
Unless you do what Belichick does and just wheel and deal them and just take 55 third and fourth round picks.
You've got
and turn
a brainwashing machine when you come into a room, and he's a bit like a Clockwork Orange.
He shows you
a video.
Yeah.
Your eyes are put open with matchsticks of the of the Patriots winning for 24 hours until you're totally brainwashed and you've got no personality left. And he also has TalkSport 2 playing 24 hours. And that's one of the key factors.
I've heard he loves mollycoddling.
And then, no, there's no mollycoddling.
Oh, there's no mollycoddling.
Above the sign, when they go onto the pitch, it says no mollycoddling. Just
that's
above
their sign.
Yeah.
Welcome to Foxborough, no mollycoddling. I love it. Oh man, it's great to catch up with you. I can't believe it's taken us this long to get you on this season, but all is well in Marrickland by the sound of it.
Yeah, pretty cool, mate. Just sitting here having a nice cup of coffee, enjoying the endless possibilities of life.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, on Twitter, and catch up with some of your stuff, you're quite a prolific filmmaker as well, right? You make a lot of comedy shorts and stuff on YouTube. So where can they find you?
I'm on YouTube, on Twitter, at Marek Larwood. I've recently, my new hobby is walking now.
Oh, really?
I'm just going lots of walks, and I make videos of my walks. I understand that a lot of people listen to this, and no one will like walking, but I've set up a new channel called...
Some people will like walking.
Cool Dudes Walking Club.
The Cool Dudes Walking Club.
The opposite of American football.
Well, it's kind of yin and yang, so that's nice for our listeners to kind of, offset a crazy 6 hours of red zone with Cool Dudes Walking. Cool Dudes Walking...
Club.
Cool Dudes Walking Club, my bad. Sorry, Cool Dudes Walking Club. We'll go get stuck in with that. And also, you do a great Boris Johnson impression as well. So go and search that out on YouTube or your video platform of choice. Great to chat to you, man. I hope the game goes well for your Lions tonight. And come and see us very, very soon.
Take care, dude. Bye.
Bye, mate. Fantastic stuff from Marek. You can follow him at Marek Larwood on Twitter and go and get involved with all his YouTube stuff as well. A very funny man, and I can guarantee you'll be hearing more from him throughout the course of this season. Right then, from Marek and crazy comedy to some deep dive stats. This guy got in touch with us a little while ago with some really, really interesting data on the international series. And Harry, the producer, said we've got to get him on the show, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Delighted to welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, Charlie Mullen. Charlie, great to have you on the show, and I'm looking forward to digging down into a bit of data with you. Where did all that come from, first things first? Where did your love of stats first rear its head?
Well, when I was young and getting into the NFL, when it first came to England in the 1980s, I think it was, I was fascinated with these numbers that came up on the screen. And I was obviously being a very curious young teenager. I was like interested to find out more about it. So pretty much a lot of self-tuition got into finding out more about the game. But I've grown to love ever since. And ever since those days, it's sort of been my number one sport, and I'm really glad to be involved in a show like this that covers the NFL so well.
Well, the international series is where you're really, really keying in on, and what I want to get into with you, because you got some really interesting stuff, not just on the game yesterday between the Panthers and the Bucks, but I want to get some of your favorite stats of the series so far, not least self-interest here. I wrote a piece for, and I'm plugging away here, seamless segue into a plug, column I wrote, international series, all pro lineup. And we based that, I got a lot of help from the ESPN stats and info crew in terms of selecting players based on their performances. So it might not be the best players that have come over here, but have had the best performances. So it's an area I'm interested in too. And we'll get into some of your all-time NFL international series stats, some of the stats from last night. Just want to ask you something quickly in terms of how stats are, and analytics specifically, are informing the game more and more. So on the back of the live broadcast we did from Spurs yesterday, headed back, hot-footed back in a cab, I was telling Ollie, our producer, that me and Mike Carlson were in the back of a cab watching Red Zone on a tablet, and got home to carry on watching all the games. And it wasn't the Dolphins going for the 2-point conversion on the win, but just the amount of times that teams are going for it now, either on fourth down when I don't think they need to, early in the game when they're still very close in terms of score. Is there any data that you've seen on that? Because I fired something out about it that I think it's out of control. Gab Marcotti, ESPN's Gab Marcotti.
Oh, yes,
Gab's going to be coming on the show later on this season. He's a big Philly fan. He wrote back to me saying, I wrote on Twitter, going for it on fourth down, 2-point conversions, getting out of control. He wrote back, analytics, baby. And I wrote back and said, oh, I get that, but individual situation has to be considered as well when you're interpreting the numbers, right? You've got season trajectory, you know, both micro and macro, so how this game's going, how the season's going, what a win will mean for you at this particular time in your division, your quarterback mindset, the fluency you've had over recent quarters, and whether you can actually deliver on that fourth down conversion if you've been failing miserably. All these different things factor in, don't they?
They do indeed. And you mentioned the Miami-Washington game yesterday, which came down to a two-point conversion. Personally, I would have gone for the traditional extra point to take the game into overtime. But there's a part of me that thinks Miami perhaps wanted to lose that game and competition for the number one draft choice next season. So
the conspiracy theory abounds. Yeah.
It baffles me when coaches say, you know, I went for the two-point conversion when a PAT would have level the score and take the game in overtime, because they say, well, we might not have got the ball in overtime. And it's just like, well, yeah, but you might also have got the ball.
I've got the ball in overtime, exactly. And even then, just to go for a fourth and one when you're, I don't know, 7-3 down in the second quarter, I just don't get it.
No.
All right, let's talk about the international series. And speaking of which, didn't Vrabel go for it on two for the Titans and went for the win when the Titans were over last year?
But Chargers, yes, that's right. Yeah.
Let's start with Jameis Winston, who had a nightmare at Spurs, didn't he? Similar, I guess, to Spurs' performance against Bayern Munich. You could draw parallels there. I spoke like a true West Ham fan, and I've just lost all our Spurs listeners in one go. I'm only playing. But Jameis Winston had a messy old day, and it started badly and just went downhill from there for most of it.
Well, yeah, you mentioned the Spurs, and I'll just throw this little stat in that the stat count was 7-2 yesterday. So for all those Bayern Munich fans and people who don't like Spurs, there's one for you. But yeah, Jameis Winston yesterday had a shocker. He did his best to put the INT into the international series. And also, you can't spell Winston without INT. So he was living up to both those, really. But yeah,
I'm loving that. I think I can see 5 to 7 minutes of international series stat stand-up rolling. Double down with Marek, who was on earlier, and we could get a feedback.
I'm open to all offers. But yeah, 5 interceptions and the 7 sacks are records for an NFL London game. He won't need reminding of that. But I guess if you want to say on a plus side on a disastrous day for him, he threw his 100th career touchdown pass, and he also became the second quarterback to throw for 400 yards in London. Second behind Kirk Cousins, who did it for Washington against Cincinnati in the tied game that needed overtime. So he's the first player to do it throughout four quarters. So
that's incredible, isn't it? You've got, I mean, talk about an absolutely topsy-turvy performance statistically. So he basically had in regulation time the most yardage out of any quarterback that has come over. And yet he had probably the worst or amongst the worst performances we've seen in an international series game. Okay. Strange stuff. What about his counterpart, Kyle Allen? And talk about that 99-yard drive he masterminded.
Yeah, it was superb, wasn't it? Just a week ago, when the Bears and Raiders played, we saw a 97-yard touchdown drive, which was the longest in an NFL London game. So to see that surpassed in the next game on the same stadium takes some doing. But 99 yards, 12 plays. Christian McCaffrey, 1 yard touchdown run. McCaffrey came into the game all guns blazing with, 866 total scrimmage yards to lead the NFL. He's having a wow of a season and rightly so, an MVP candidate so early in the season. He became the first player to have a touchdown catch and run for another touchdown in the same game. In the first 26 games, the first 25 games, that had never happened.
You're kidding me, really?
McCaffrey was the first to do it yesterday, and later on in the game. Later on in the game, his teammate, Curtis Samuel, did the same thing. So, like London buses, I guess you could say.
That is extraordinary, and I can't believe that hasn't happened before. Okay, and Kyle Allen, 99 yards, has the new record. Well, what an afternoon it was for him.
Can't be broke either, can it?
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's never going. Tied but not broken. So he's always going to have that. What about Gerald McCoy on the other side of the ball? Bringing the pain once again, and McCoy's walked away with a record himself, hasn't he?
He has. He's equaled Jared Allen's record of 2.5 sacks in a game. That was back in Game 7 in 2013 for the Vikings against the Steelers. So, we still haven't had anybody with 3 sacks, but I'm sure Gerald McCoy will be very happy with his day's work, as will the rest of the Panthers defense, who basically, I'm sure Jameis Winston is still having nightmares about facing them.
And no doubt about that. Okay, so 3 goodies from yesterday's game. What about generally all time? What are your favorite stats from the international series to date?
Well, I'm still waiting for a kickoff return for a touchdown.
Right.
And also a punt return for a touchdown. Neither has happened. After yesterday's game, there has been 259 kickoffs. and 236 punts. So the way things are going in the NFL, you know, there's a lot of touchbacks, etc., from kickoff. So I'm not sure if we'll ever see a kickoff return for a touchdown. But there again, I don't think many people would have expected to see the fair catch kick yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. We almost had a first then. Are we going to ever see that again? I don't know.
You never know. It was funny listening to the American commentator saying, oh, the English fans probably don't know what's going on. And they were saying, well, I'm quite sure there's a lot of Americans who aren't quite sure.
Yeah. How patronizing can you get? Yeah, these there, what's going on? I mean, come off it. It's like, yeah, exactly. How rare is that in the NFL? So yeah, kickoff return for a touchdown and punt return, neither has happened. Anything else on your bingo card that you're waiting to scratch off?
I don't think there's been a blocked punt either, so that's about it. I mean, there's loads of other things, but those are the ones that stand out for me. I'm waiting. I've got a tweet already, so whenever that happens, it'll be...
Fire that out. Yeah. I'll leave you with, seeing as you've come bearing gifts to our pod, Charlie, I'll leave you with something that it's not an international series game, but I thought you'd like, as a statistician, Adam Schefter tweeted a little bit earlier on today. San Francisco, seeing as we've been talking them up as legit, they've got an 83-point differential, which is the franchise's best through five games since, can you guess what year? So it's the best through five games since what year?
Well, I'm guessing because they were 4-0 for the first time since 1990, I'm going to go 1990.
1961, which is really, yeah. And let's think of all the great 49ers teams we've seen in that time. The 1990 is a good landmark as well there, all those fantastic Walsh and Montana and young sides of the 80s and early 90s. So San Francisco, statistically anyway, things are looking legit for you. There you go. That is my stat gift for you, courtesy of
great. I appreciate that.
Shefty, there you go. Well, thanks for coming on, man. We really appreciate that. And if our listeners want to get into this more, because it is a fundamental part of the game, and whether it's a kind of curiosity or you know, more deep-seated than that. And I guess my Twitter discussion going full circle with Gab kind of suggests that, really, that analytics and data are absolutely conditioning and steering more and more of what we're seeing happening on the field and decisions that are made by coaching staff. So where can our listeners follow you for more data?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Charlie P. Mullen, M-U-L-L, A for Alpha, N for November. But I'm guessing if this has been... it'll be on the link on Twitter.
Exactly. We will give you plenty of pluggage. Don't you worry about that. Good to chat to you, Charlie. Thanks very much indeed for dropping by.
My pleasure, Nat. All the best.
Yep, great. We'll roll out Charlie's social media on our channels, as I say, so you can follow him if you want to get into your stats, get your stat on a little bit more. Terrific stuff from him. Great stuff from Marek. As I said at the top of the show, we're going to be back on Wednesday with Iron Mike deep diving. So fire your questions in at the NC show. Lots of extra bonus video content going out on our social channels as well, particularly Facebook and Instagram. So follow us on all of those, whichever one is your social media channel of choice, and you'll get loads of bonus content firing out throughout the week. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you Wednesday. Bye for now.